Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Cocktails and Spirits. This is Alfonso, also known as Fonz. With me, like always, is Eric. What's up, Eric? How are we doing?
Oh, man, we're doing great. Doing great, like always. You know, just excited for our next episode. And with us today, we have Brian Clem from Selva Ray Rums, brand ambassador. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm great, fellas. Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for coming on. Excited to talk to you. We love... We always say this, we love rum, and the cool thing about rum is there's so many different, expressions of it. And then there's so many unique countries where it comes from. And in this case, we will be talking about, Selva Ray rum, and we'd love to hear all about the brand and for you to tell us a little bit more about it.
Awesome. Yes. Awesome. Well, I mean, listen, let's be honest. We could talk about, as you guys know, we could talk about rum for weeks, maybe even months. Right. We could talk about Selva Ray for days, but essentially Selva Ray, which is Jungle King, Selva Jungle Ray King, is a line of four bottles that we have, our white, our chocolate, our coconut, and our owner's reserve. It's pretty much a line of Cuban style rums made in Panama, all single estate. So the entire process is done there in Pasay. And currently we have the highest rated white rum in tasting panel history and the highest rated flavored spirit in tasting panel history, and we are very proud.
Now it is, so it's a Cuban style rum from but it's made in Panama, right?
Exactly. And I'm glad you hit on that. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, just would love to hear, so what is that Cuban style, and then what does the bring being made in Panama? Because I imagine a Panama rum is a lot different as well than a Cuban rum, but you're bringing the Cuban style rum. Does the style come from like the way it's made, or what's the Cuban style about it?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked. So, you know, it being a Cuban style rum is the process in which it's made, right? The fact that it is made in Panama, that takes in the terroir and the climate from which it's made, right? So when someone asks what it is, those three hits are really important. Single estate Panamanian rum made in the Cuban style. And you can say it however you want, but those three things are very important. Cuban style is usually going to be grade A molasses, copper column stills, a lot lighter, cleaner style of rum, right? Whereas using it in Panama, not to say that, oh, this is a Panamanian rum and Panamanian rum is made in a specific way. You can make, you know, you can make rum however you want, so long as you are abiding by the governing law in which you're making it in, right? So if you have to abide by the laws of Puerto Rico, if you're making it in Puerto Rico, or abide by the laws in Louisiana, if you're making it in the States. However, you can still make Cuban style rum there, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yes. I get you.
And so the reason why Panama is so important is because, you know, you're looking at, I mean, even really truly, the area where it's made in Pasay, Panama, which is a small city around 4 hours outside of Panama City, it is in a region called the Herrera region. It's also known as the sugarcane region because the area is so conducive to sugarcane growth, right? We're talking about a grass, right? So you need really high heat, you need high temperatures, you need a lot of water. 9 months out of the year, it's always raining. 13 hours plus sunlight. That's a yearly average. It's so close to the equator. you're just talking about really, really amazing conditions, volcanic soil, really, really beautiful, beautiful volcanic soil. So the conditions there are pretty perfect for growing sugarcane. And I think that's one of the reasons why we really want to ride in on that single estate horse, like a lot of people should. But listen, if we're making it in Idaho, who cares, right? We're making it in Panama, so we want to tell everyone about it.
Yeah, and the Blanco, I'm so used to it. It is now the silver rum, right? You said that's one of the highest rated rums out there right now.
That is the highest rated white rum in tasting panel history. It's a blend of 3 and 5 year, all ex bourbon barrels, right? We're using grade A molasses, proprietary yeast derived from wild pineapples, and then obviously charcoal filtered after being blended. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely phenomenal. It's still delicate the way a traditional Cuban style white rum should be, but it's nuanced and has a lot more elevated characteristics, similar to almost like a whiskey, really, truly. I mean, you do kind of, you get a lot of, it's got a bite, right? It's still 40%. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's clean. but you get a lot of key lime pie. I get a lot of graham cracker, get some citrus. It's a really, really beautiful rum. And, you know, that was kind of the idea that the fellas had. And when I say fellas, I mean the original owners and founders. You know, it all started with a mission to create a white rum that you could sip on neat or on the rocks and make delicious cocktails with. And I think they kind of hit that on the mark.
Yeah. Like, I just tried the Blanc, the white rum, Eric. I don't know if you got a chance to try it, but it's exactly that. It's very good to sip. And then I feel like, man, I love tropical drinks. Like, I really, really do. I love tiki. I love tropical. And it just feels like this would make such a good piña colada. It would be perfect for right now for the heat.
Well, you know, Fonz, I'll tell you this, man. You know, a lot of people want to say, you know, go if you want to see what a bar is like, go order an old fashioned. I tell them go order a daiquiri, right? You order a daiquiri, man, you'll know if they're using fresh lime juice or not. You'll know if they even know what a classic daiquiri is or not. Sometimes you get hit with the old, I don't have strawberry puree or I don't have a blender. And that's okay. That's fine. That's kind of something I've gotten used to over the years. But it tells you a lot about their fundamentals, their technique, what well rum they use, or if they're going to ask you what you prefer. It really does kind of tell you what a program and what a bar and bartender is fully capable of. And I think a daiquiri is a cocktail similar to the category of rum. That cocktail has been bastardized, and it's such a beautiful, clean, classic cocktail that's, you know, multi-seasonal, super low cost, super easy to make at home or at the bar. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it only has three ingredients, man. We're all using the same lime juice. We're all using the same sugar. And really that backbone is going to be the rum. And if you're making it with Sauv Rae, you probably got one of the best daiquiris you can get.
I would agree. And I'm going to have to try one.
You should. Yeah. You should.
And that's one of the ones that stood out to me the most. We were fortunate enough to get a sample of three of the rums that we have. And yeah, I think by far the white was my favorite. And just the way that you explained it, it kind of hits every aspect of that recipe that you guys have. So it's amazing. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
I'm glad to hear that, man. It's my baby, man. The white is my baby.
Now, O'Brien, question that is coming out a lot earlier than I thought, but I like it because you brought it up. As a global brand ambassador, when you are out and trying to maybe, I don't know how much of a role you have in going out to bars and you know, trying to get the brand out at bars, restaurants, you know, what do you look for, or do you train bartenders to how to use your product, how to, you know, feature it in cocktails, or do you guys have a list of places you want to target and showcase Sauv Rae the correct way for you?
Well,
guys,
it's a little bit of everything, right? Not everybody wants to know everything. Sometimes, you know, every bar or restaurant, they're their own little universe, right? There's a lot of, they have their own politics, they have their own relationships, they have their own egos. And, you know, sometimes you don't want to step on those things. If they just want a list of cocktails, then great. That's awesome. We appreciate your support. And here is a list of cocktails. However, I do think brand education and also category education is very, very important if we want to see this category succeed, especially when you're using something like Sauv Rae, in particular, the chocolate, right? Our chocolate is 35% ABV, right? You hear chocolate, you think sweet, you think there's going to be sugar added. It is a rum first that so happens to be with the addition of cacao, roasted cacao. Awesome. It still has a hit. It is something that you should apply the same way you would any other traditional rum. Just know that if I make a pina colada and I sub out my white rum with my chocolate rum, I just now have a chocolate pina colada. And I also don't have to add Godiva or extra sweeteners or heavy mixers. And I think that's the brilliance in it, but you don't get that knowledge across unless you can educate, you know, any staff that's willing to listen. And I think that's the biggest gap. A lot of people, and I'm sorry to rant on, but a lot of people in my past have asked me, you know, who's your biggest competition? And I always say the same thing, and I've been saying it for years. It's the consumer mindset. It's the misunderstanding and misrepresentation of the category of rum. And so to answer your question, education, any opportunity we can get, I think is probably the most important piece. And that liquid to lips, man, it gets them every single time.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like, every spot is going to be hopefully they're receptive. Not, well, like you said, hopefully they just continue supporting the brand. But yeah, education to the consumer, I feel like, is the hardest part, because sometimes they just want, you know, they just want the booze. So right. it's hard to get them to, you know, really, really pay attention to everything that goes into making the spirit that they're consuming. Now,
right. Yeah. Because I mean, if you would have told me this, you know, when I was, you know, 21 years old, I'd be like, okay, you know, thanks, and I would have moved on. But you know, I think as you kind of, you know, mature and as you evolve, you start wanting to learn more about it. And you're right; it's about the education and how right. it comes across.
Now, the chocolate rum, you said you guys roast cacao on it, with it, right?
Yes.
I'm really curious to hear about that process, because that sounds awesome. I tried it. It's really, really good. And like you said, it's not overly sweet like some other products that are just flavored rums. It's a great balance. And so and you do taste like the roasted cacao. So I really like mm-hmm. to hear the process of that. You can share a little bit about it.
Well, you know, so first and foremost, all of our rums are essentially the same up until a point, right? You're looking at obviously the same sugarcane. We're always using ex bourbon barrels, whereas the white is a blend of 3 and 5, and then obviously charcoal filtered. The chocolate is only a 5-year, and then there is no charcoal filtration process happening there. So that's coming out of the barrel, and then what's happening is it's going into these huge stainless steel tanks that we have. Actually, I apologize. I'm so sorry. That's our old process. What we actually used to do is we actually used to have these. We still have them. These stainless steel tanks. The 5-year rum would go in these tanks, and we would then use the roasted cacao that we source from local organic farmers, and we would toss that raw product in the tank with the 5-year aged rum, and just allow that maceration process to happen, right? And then we would filter that, and then we would bottle that, and then obviously send that out. However, we were noticing that the flavor was changing, the color was changing even. You can't put an expiration date on a bottle. And, you know, if you don't do your part on educating, or someone, you know, so happened to get a bottle of chocolate rum on the back bar and they hadn't touched it in a couple of years, you know, that bottle is going to taste different. It's going to look different, you know. So we and I think this speaks volumes to our malleability and our passion and our love and care for our brand. We immediately changed our recipe to now using a tincture to incorporate that cacao. So we're using the same raw material, obviously the same juice as well. But after we roast that cacao, we're using the same stainless steel tanks. However, we're doing a 65% to 35% solution of ethyl alcohol and water. And then we are tossing in that same raw product, that roasted cacao, and we're allowing that maceration process to happen, basically essentially creating a tincture, right? We then filter that tincture, and we add that big batch tincture now to our 5-year rum. And so that's how we get that.
Man, that's awesome. And it's awesome that you guys took the time to realize that, you know, it was changing over time, and you just, you know, made the product better so it could last longer and it could be much more consistent for the consumers.
And that's exactly what happened, Fonz. It created a lot more consistency and a lot less headaches. Obviously, when you realize something like that, it's a damn heart attack, right? It's a mad scramble to fix everything. Yeah. But we came out on top in the end, and we still have the same product that everyone loves. And so we were excited to get that done.
Now, how deep into Silver Ray did you guys come up with the other expressions, like the chocolate and the coconut? Was that immediately, or was it just the white rum, and then these two came out, and then the fourth expression, which we didn't get to try, but from what I've read, it's pretty it looks pretty good.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, we actually launched with the white and the chocolate at the same time in 2014. We only launched the coconut and the owner's reserve a few years back, along with the rebranding of our pretty much entire brand. You know, we changed the bottle, we changed the cork, we changed the logo. We kind of wrapped our story around the people who are behind it a little bit more, being, you know, obviously Bruno and being Don Pancho. You know, we really kind of embraced all that Silver Ray is and all Silver Ray had become, right? And we wanted the juice to match the bottle. But that whole change with the addition of coconut and owner's reserve only happened about two and a half years ago. I'm so sorry. Everything is a blur when it comes to time.
yeah.
Moves fast.
Especially after the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, in the last couple of years, exactly.
Now that's cool. So the chocolate came out right away. Now, do you know what the goal for that was for that type, that rum? Because when you think chocolate, you think dessert. Was it meant to be a sipping rum with a little bit of that, you know, chocolate flavor added with, you know, the way you guys are making it, or cocktails also intended? Because one thing I do see now on the Instagram is you guys feature it a lot in some really good cocktails that are kind of like dessert cocktails. But like earlier, you even mentioned it could be a chocolate pina colada. What was the goal for that rum?
To make something different, you know. You know, there's a lot of chocolate everything out there, right? And you know, there's real and there's fake and there's, you know, highly, you know, highly processed. And you know, the idea was to, you know, kind of do the same thing that we were doing with the white rum and create something that you could sip on neat, sip on the rocks, or make delicious cocktails with. And you know, not to knock anyone that is, you know, making, you know, anything, you know, incredibly viscous or incredibly sugary. I mean, you get in where you fit in and everything works somewhere, right? But, yep. You know, the chocolate rum really, really is probably the most versatile bottle that we have in our lineup. Mm-hmm. You know, you can smoke a cigar with it, right? Mm. I've seen it with Amaro and chocolate splits over, you know, strawberry ice cream. I've seen it in affogatos. I've seen it in red velvet cakes. I've seen it in cookies. I've seen it in pina coladas. It's huge with tiki. I mean, tiki, it just really, really shines through. It's amazing with mezcal. My favorite cocktail is actually something I love to drink at home called a Cacao Bravo. And it's really just grapefruit bitters, Angostura bitters, agave for the simple. And the Sauvray chocolate with a little bit of mezcal, and that smoke plays so nicely with the chocolate. You know, so it really, really kind of just, it really can do anything. Right. And it's tricky because it goes down so easily. I've seen it time and time again, man, where people are like, this is delicious. And next thing you know, you're like, yo, where did Steven go? And it's like, holy shit. You know, you find Steven in a corner later, he's got chocolate all over his mouth, you know? you know, that chocolate really, honestly, we just wanted to do something different, and kind of fit into a role or a mold that you don't typically see with flavored spirits. And I think we did that really well.
Man, yeah. Cause as soon as you open it, you get that cacao, scent off the bat, but you also get that sweetness of the rum that follows it. And it smells and it tastes very, very balanced for both.
Yeah, and then when you taste it, you don't get like that sugar bomb like from other spirits that, you know, you could tell are a lot different. But man, that mezcal drink sounded good.
Oh, it's delicious, man. You know, it's funny because especially guys, you know, they hear chocolate and they're like, oh, I'll just make sure my girlfriend gets her hands on this. It's like, you know. We do. We've been doing something called Havana Nights at the Fairmont Del Mar, down south of Los Angeles, and you know, we do cigar rolling next to our tasting table, and then we have some satellite bars and live salsa band. It's been a really, really huge hit. However, it's funny, the guys are the ones drinking the chocolate the most with their cigars, and they love it, man. They love it.
Sounds like a great pairing.
Yeah.
When's the next one down there? They're often.
I believe we're going to be doing another one this month. I'm not too sure. I'll shoot you a text after we get off this.
Yeah, because that sounds good. And I've been, Eric and I have talked about it recently. We want to get a little into cigar pairings with spirits because I hear it's pretty good. You know, there's big clubs that do it. So we kind of want to hop on that trend. And this sounds good too.
And I'll say too, to any of your listeners, you know, we do events quite often, actually. If you get on our page, you can see our event stories. We do a lot even outside of what we show. If anyone's interested in going to any of our events, which are all around the country, all they have to do is sign up for our newsletter. And we try and our best to keep them posted on a lot of our ongoings. Follow us on Instagram. We try and post on our story, let people know what we're doing in their areas.
That's good to know. That's good to know. Now, the coconut rum, what's that process in that coconut or little bit about it on how that one is made.
So that's actually very similar. It's kind of a hybrid of the two, the white and the chocolate, in the sense that it is charcoal filtered. It is a younger rum. It's only 2 years. However, the way we add that raw coconut meat is the exact same way that we add our chocolate. And then that is 30% ABV. We do add sugar to the coconut. We add cane sugar to that guy. And it's just, I mean, it's so, I mean, I've heard it only maybe three times, but I think it's such an amazing description of it. It tastes like alcoholic coconut water. It is just, it's so, it's bright, it's clean, yes, it's fresh. You can really tell that we're using real coconut. You know, there's no added oils, no added artificial sweeteners. I mean, it's just a clean, clean coconut product.
Yeah, I was pouring some right now because I need to revisit
this. Yeah, so I don't know if I didn't pay attention in the beginning, but what's the year process or the year difference between the white and the coconut?
So the white is 3 and 5 year, and then the coconut is 2 year. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then the chocolate is at 5.
It's exactly what you said, like alcoholic coconut water. It really, yeah, it really is that. It's yeah, fresh too. It's really, really fresh.
Yeah,
it's not like thick or too silky.
Right.
What's some of the ways you guys obviously would feature that? I imagine some sort of pineapple cocktails, but anything else that you've noticed that goes really well that you wouldn't think?
One of our most successful cocktails is a cocktail I came up with called the Hollywood Colada. And essentially it tastes just like a pina colada, except it does not have any dairy or cream in it. So it's essentially just a little bit of lime juice, pineapple, agave, coconut water, and our coconut rum. Very clean, very refreshing, super sessionable, something you can drink all year round. But during the summer, it's, you know, the pina colada is a great drink, but sometimes it's not the most sessionable cocktail. You can't have three, right? But this is something that you can have three. You can batch when you're doing a picnic or you're having friends over, and you guys can just keep on drinking and enjoy the night.
Dude, I love that.
It does have like a long, soft finish to it. Yes. So I can see how that doesn't get too overwhelming after a couple
of
drinks.
Now, in this case, for the chocolate and the coconut, why the ABV lower? Was that the intended goal? Was that how you were able to get those flavors to really be out there?
Or that's exactly what it is. You know, it's funny you say that because Rob, one of the owners and co-founders, him and I were going to the distillery just to taste the samples as we were coming up with the coconut. And, you know, the ABV was the hardest part. You know, going from 30% to 35% to whatever it is, I mean, the difference is drastic, right? And, you know, we just kind of felt, you know, at 30, the process worked. And I don't question Don Pancho. Honestly, he probably wouldn't give me anyways, to be honest with you. You know, I just listened to the master, and if it works, it works. And that's what we ended up going with. But it's funny, when I first met Francisco Fernandez, or Don Pancho, our master blender and distiller, one of the first questions I asked him was, why do we use, and I think this kind of plays into what we're talking about here, why are we aging the chocolate, the rum that we're using for 5 years, when we're using such a robust and strong flavor like chocolate? Why not just use a neutral sugarcane distillate? And his answer, so simply, I swear to you, was literally just because it tastes better. And I loved it, man. I mean, so there's a lot of care, a lot of love, and a lot of delicate touch that goes behind all four of those bottles. And listen, man, I don't ask any questions. If Don Pancho says drink this aged hot dog water, I'm gonna drink it.
It's experience. He goes, like, I have a lot of experience. All you gotta do is just go. Trust
me. He said, shut up, kid. Put it in your mouth.
Now, what is Don Pancho like? How did he, you know, if you could share a little bit about how he got to become a master blender, a master distiller? Was it part of his family growing up? Did he grow into it, or was it just a whole different, you know, way that he got into it?
Well, first of all, Don Pancho, who's now in his, I believe he's in his late 80s, he is cool as hell, man. He is Just he's such a character. He's straight out of a movie. He's such a friendly, funny guy, and he's so lovable once you get to know him. But his whole life has been surrounded by rum. His father was a canero, and when he was growing up, and he at the age of 13 joined him in the fields right next to him. And he kind of rose to the ranks, and actually at a very young age, before the terminology was common tongue, he was the assistant master blender at Havana Club.
Oh, cool.
Oh, wow.
And pretty spectacular. And he kind of moved around quite a bit through Cuba and became the Cuban minister of rum. He ended up asking, Castro if he could leave Cuba, and he moved to Panama. And him and Carlos Esquivel, his managing partner, they actually purchased Las Cabras, which is the distillery where Salvaray is made, back in the I'd say early to mid 90s, which is essentially an old sugar mill that was built in the early 1900s. And they pretty much just rebuilt it, refurbished it, and started making rum in Passaic, Panama in the 90s.
Wow. So he had a huge role with Cuba
he had a massive role when it comes to Cuban style rum. He revolutionized the way the fermentation process, the aging process, the distillation process. He has had his hands on some of the best rums that have ever been made.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's amazing.
So,
I had the privilege of going to Cuba a couple of years back, and I really wish and I regret not really being so involved into spirits as I am now. Because I did visit the Havana Club distillery and learned about it, and we went to Hemingway's bar. But I really wish I had that interest that I do now to learn more and educate myself a little bit better.
You know what though, Eric? That's why I love that you say that. But really truly, when you taste a bottle of anything, that art, I mean, it speaks volumes to the craftsmanship of not only that blender, but his team or her team, right? And the area and place where it's made and what it's made from, and I think that's just such a beautiful thing, right? And a lot of people just, they just throw them back and act a fool, but it's a beautiful thing when you can open up a bottle and really, really just have an experience. You know what I mean? I don't mean to sound corny. I really don't mean to sound.
No, man, it's true.
No, that's true.
It's one thing we've learned. Unfortunately, alcohol does what alcohol does, right? And when you have a good time, usually it's because you had a couple of drinks, and it is what it is. You get drunk, but there's a lot of history. There's a lot that goes into making each spirit. Whether it's very artisanal product or very small batch, very family oriented company. It's really cool the way they do it, and each spirit has its own characteristics, and it's fun to learn. So Eric, we just gotta find a way to go to Cuba again, so go back.
Don't sleep on Panama either. Panama City is probably one of the most slept on places I've ever been in my entire life. It is absolutely beautiful and absolutely incredible.
How is the distillery like down there?
It is out in the middle of nowhere, man. It's in the middle of the jungle, damn near, right? Even if on the back of the bottle that you have in your hand, if you look on the back, it says "Made in the Jungle." There's a lot of wordplay with a lot of the things we do. I will say that Salvaray, that name, is definitely a nod to Don Pancho. A lot of people call him Jungle King or Nariz Dorado.
Oh, that's cool.
Golden nose. But Made in the Jungle, I mean, Passaic, Panama is a small town of, I think, around maybe 2,000 people. It's a pretty big distillery, but they grow a lot of sugar cane there, and it's not too much going. I mean, you go from Panama City and then you drive into Passaic, it's a world of difference.
Man, that'd be cool to be down there in the middle of the jungle with some rum. That'd be cool.
Earlier you mentioned a single estate. Now in tequila, typically they do single estates, so they have a control over the type of agaves that they use mainly for the ones that have the more sugar concentrate to it. Is that the same reason why you guys do single estate, or maybe you can tell us a little bit more about?
Absolutely.
You guys decided?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So single estate obviously gives us the opportunity to control the entire process, right? We know what we're using. We know where it comes from. We know how it's harvested. We know how it's being fermented. And I mean, really, truly, I mean, and just kind of wrapping that up as neatly as possible. That's really the luxury you have when you're using that single estate process. You have full control. You have full control.
And then, for example, how long does that take for that sugarcane to grow or be mature? Or what would it be?
I believe the sugarcane is about a year. I'm sorry. Well, right before that, I wanted to hit on something before I forget. What were we saying? What were we saying right before?
How long does it take to grow?
No, it was right before that. I can't remember if it was a statement or the question. I don't want to.
You're good.
Control over the mature or sugar content on the.
Right. That's what I wanted to speak on. Yeah. Thank you. Especially with sugarcane, sugarcane, it's a grass and it's in high demand, obviously. Right. Sugarcane, mm-hmm. Is obviously used for sugar. Right. And so a lot of it is grown in labs, or it's not grown in the most sustainable way, or, there are a lot of labor issues, as we've seen in the past and still see today. And so, again, another reason why single estate is very, very special and also a high luxury is because we can steer away from that, right? And we know how our employees are being treated. We can speak to the sustainability of the sugarcane in the process. And we know that this isn't, sugarcane GA1234 made in some lab, right?
Damn, that's cool to hear,
that's
man.
Great.
You guys are doing your part to make sure the sugarcane is continuing to grow. And like you said, it's not just made in labs. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Right, right.
That's awesome. Now, you guys have amazing juice. You guys have amazing presentation, a great master blender and distiller. And then you guys got a pretty good, a couple people that work with you guys. Tell us a little bit about that collaboration you guys have with, I'll let you tell us who's involved with the brand.
Yeah. So, my boss, we have four co-founders and owners, Mark Gold, who's kind of the mastermind, really, truly, all of this is kind of at the behest of his passion and his motivation to create something like this. But he kind of pulled in his brother, Seth Gold, and their brother-in-law, who they grew up together. Robert so happened to marry their sister. So they were brothers before they were blood brothers. And Bruno Mars, that is our, as one of our four, co-owners. They're amazing guys. They're really fun to work with. Obviously it's not like working with a lot of, other typical brands. There's a lot more events. There's a lot of obviously concerts. We try and work like anyone else and make sure that they appreciate the juice for what it is. And that's something that Bruno is actually very, very passionate about. It's very, very easy to kind of, throw him in the pile of another celebrity with a brand, but truly, truly, he really is one of the original co-founders and owners. His mother is from the Philippines and his father is from Puerto Rico. He grew up in Hawaii. So, he's big on rum culture and he's a huge fan of rum. And when he got a bottle of this in LA, he just really wanted to get involved and wanted to meet the boys. And he signed on and he's been rocking with us since 2014. I will say that our entire rebrand, our bottle change, our logo change, even the owner's reserve, a lot of those things are huge, huge piece of Bruno and his creative mind, his creative genius. It was kind of his idea to really just kind of change things and really kind of show the premiumization of the rum category. And, you know, you look at a lot of bottles of rum, and I'm sorry, I'm going on and on, but you look at a lot of bottles of rum and there's like a pirate on there, or there's like a, you know, a boat, or, you know, there's like some like corny, you know, play on words, you know, whatever. You know, we want people to want to know what that bottle is. If you're looking at your bottle right now, you'll see it says rum, very thin and very small. When that's on the back bar and you see those beautiful silhouettes with those four different bottles in different colors, you want to know what that is, right? Oh yeah, that's actually the highest rated white rum in tasting panel history. It's a call to action that works. And if you can get people to pay attention and it tastes good, you're not the little kid in the back of the room with your hand up and he ain't got shit to say. Right. We have a lot to say. We just got to put our hand up. And I think that, you know, the whole rebrand at the Genius of Bruno was just probably one of the best things we could have done, because now we feel like we are the silver ray we've always been trying or wanting to be. Right. It all kind of came full circle. So,
yeah, man, the presentation's great. It looks great. Now, I am curious, was he just, which bottle was it that he really enjoyed of Silver Ray, because you said he had a bottle and wanted to instantly be involved?
It was the white. So yeah, actually one of our cocktails that we actually use quite a bit is the dancing juice, and that's something that Bruno is a huge fan of, and it's really simple. It's just a squeeze of lime with the white rum and ginger ale. But yeah, the white is funny because it's a white rum, right? Mm-hmm. But it's a lot of people's favorites. I mean, it really shows you what you can do with such a simple, you know, just a white rum, right? A white rum, really? It can taste like this? I mean, it blows people's minds.
No, yeah, it's delicious, and it's, I mean, very versatile, very good. And then I just feel like rum overall, it just needs more attention because it's so unique. And one of the things I really enjoy, it could go really good on cocktails, and it's very easy to sip as well. And then there's just history of it from many different countries. In this case, it's a Panama rum with a Cuban style, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that, man. I mean, you go to like a BevMo or a Total Wine and you go down the whiskey aisle and it's like Scotch whiskey, flavored whiskey, Japanese whiskey, you know, bourbon, you know, whatever. And it's so delicately organized, and you go down the rum aisle and it just says rum, and it's like, and it's just colors and numbers, and no one has any idea what even question to ask first to better understand what it is they're looking at. And so I agree, it does need a little bit more attention. I think that's one of the reasons why we do what we do. We want people to ask those questions, you know?
Yeah. Cause at first glance, you know, you look at the bottle and you don't think rum. And that really shows, you know, the way it captivates you by just looking at it. I'm like, okay, that doesn't really look like rum. What is it if it's not rum? I mean, if it's not something else.
Right, right. Yeah.
Now, Brian, what is some of your role that you know, what do you do out? Do you go out to events for the brand, or what's your main role with the brand?
So I'm actually the brand ambassador and the director of brand advocacy. So I kind of work as more of like an internal, like intermediate resource for the marketing team, events, sales team, just kind of like making sure that our brand and our company gets an appropriate share of, like, you know, language, mind, cocktails within like the trade partners, media, events, consumers, whether that's on-premise, off-premise, or even someone at their home bar, just to kind of create more cohesive consistency, you know, in all of our language, whether it's social media, the website, events, podcasts, you know, whatever it may be. That's kind of my acting role as director of brand advocacy. And then obviously as a brand ambassador, a lot of dinners, a lot of events, a lot of speaking engagements. And then obviously helping out with the sales team in different markets as needed. So kind of all over the place, man. I think I live in a plane more than I do in my home sometimes.
That's cool.
It's funny because, you know, it sounds like you're having a great time and a blast, but, you know, at the end of the day, you're still work.
It's a job.
It's still a job.
You guys, Yeah, it's you know, a lot of people, I'm not a huge Instagram poster, but you know, when I do post, I think a lot of people probably see, you know, they think it's all glory, but you know, on Instagram, it's a shame of social media. It's all a highlight reel, but what they don't see is the stuff that happens behind to make those things possible. It's it takes a lot of work. It really does.
That's very true. Now, of all those things that you do, what are some of your favorite ways to really express what you like about the brand? And I guess, you know, just what is it that you enjoy the most out of those things?
You know, honestly, the lead up sometimes can be a headache, right? Because you have to plan for it. And it just comes with the territory, right? But I have to say, I love all of them, right? I love events. I love the, you know, I love going to, you know, I don't even know how many shows I've been to now. I've seen Bruno live so many times. I honestly can't even count. I love everything that I have the privilege of being involved in. But I have to say, staff trainings is probably my favorite piece. I love going and talking to staff and listening to them, talking with them, answering their questions. I love when they geek out. I love watching them taste this rum for the first time. That's got to be hands down my absolute favorite piece of this job.
Dude, that's awesome, man. And I can tell for sure you had a good amount of bartending experience beforehand.
Yeah, I've been doing it for quite some time, that's for sure.
Yeah, I could tell that. That's awesome, man. So do you still develop cocktails constantly? Are you still doing it often?
Not as often. We have, over the years now, we have quite a significant Rolodex of cocktails. Obviously, in the beginning, that was a huge, huge part of my job. Now we kind of have a long list of cocktails, some that we haven't even ever used before, that we can call on depending on the situation, the account, the event, or whatever it may be. But every now and then you'll get a special request or something needs to be done or whatever, but a lot more far and few than it used to be. That's for sure.
Damn, that's awesome, man. That's cool. But like we talked about earlier, man, it quickly, time sneaks up. We love talking and we love hearing about everything. You want to tell us a little bit about where we can find Selvar? You guys distribution must be pretty easy. You guys must be everywhere, right?
We are everywhere in the States. You know, you can get on our website and you can find out where you can find it close to you. And our website is just selvaray.com. That's selvaray.com. Super easy. And I would definitely follow us on Instagram. And that is, again, Selvaray Rum. That's our handle. You know, you check out our stories. We definitely let people know where we're going to be in terms of events. You get on our newsletter. We keep everyone posted. We do a lot of gifting campaigns, sweepstakes, all that jazz. So, our website kind of guides you to a lot of different places if you want to get involved. So,
well, that's awesome, man. Perfect. And do you want to drop yours, or you're good with just the Selvar Ray?
Oh no, absolutely. Mine is just my name. It's at Brian Klemm, Brian Klemm. Once every full moon, I might throw a post out there, but
Sounds good, man. Well, we'll be sure to, I know I'm going to be checking out that newsletter because I want to see what events are here in SoCal.
Awesome. Well, guys, I really appreciate you guys having me, man. I'd love to come back and talk about some other stuff if you guys are so inclined. So you guys have been awesome.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, we appreciate you.
Yeah. There's a lot of great information, a lot of new stuff that we have now at our sleeve. So we appreciate your knowledge and you teaching us a little bit more.
Absolutely. Well, you guys take care out there and you get some sleep. I know we're all busy men.
I know, for real, man.
Yeah.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, see you guys.
All right, take care.